I'd like to start by acknowledging
the traditional custodians of this land
and pay my respects to their elders
past, present,
and to acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded.
Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land. Hi, welcome to The Colour Cycle. I'm Lena Nahluz, coming to you from the Wangal land of the Eora Nation with an interview series called Pace Setters, documenting the stories of pioneering artists from culturally diverse backgrounds. Tony Ayres is one of Australia's leading film and television directors, writers and producers. He's won many awards and produced some of Australia's best TV, powerful dramas like Christos Tsolkas's The Slap and Stateless, inspired in part by the imprisonment of Australian citizen Cornelia Rau in an immigration detention centre. One of my personal favourites is his feature film Home Song Stories, loosely based on his own life. Over three decades, he's produced work looking at the stories of diverse Australia, tackling the intersections of race, class, sexuality, and the complexity of identity. He was born in Portuguese Macau, now part of China, and was orphaned by the time he was 11. Having lost his mother to suicide and not knowing his father, Ayres and his sister carved their path through life as they worked through their trauma. And for a young Tony, filmmaking began with wanting to tell his life story. He's speaking with Walkley award-winning journalist, director, producer and host, Patrick Aboud.
It always starts with the impulse to write as a way of dealing with difficult situations. And so it was trying to understand how I was feeling as a teenager, being in love with a boy for the first time. I used to write poetry and talk about it that way. Coming from a very traumatized childhood with my mother's mental health issues kind of overshadowing our entire experience of being in Australia. I tried to understand that through writing. I think that this impulse to write, when I was at university, I used to write short stories as well, around sexuality, my family history. And it was always those things that kind of kicked off the creative for me. So it was always very personally motivated.
So it's like taking, your real life experiences and in some way having those inspire some kind of creative output. And it may never become something bigger, but it's just the kind of instigator.
The motivation was trying to understand what was happening and then putting that out into the world and seeing whether there was an audience for it or whether the way that I expressed it was in any way useful to anyone else. Because if it remains a diary entry or it remains a session with my therapist. But if I was able to express it in a way which allowed other people to access and feel the things that I was feeling, it became something closer to a work of art.
Do you remember the first moment where you realised I've just made something and it's not just about me expressing something that I felt internally? It's about all of a sudden realising this has resonated. There's a resonance with someone outside of myself. Do you remember what that was?
For me, the very first thing that was actually profoundly well received, I had just finished film school and I wrote a half-hour piece called The Long Ride, which was for an SBS series, anthology series called Under the Skin. And it was, about a taxi journey that my mother, my sister and I took when I was about 10 years old and living in above a fruit shop in Western Australia. And we went on a long journey from Perth to Bunbury, which is, hours away. And we had lunch in a Chinese restaurant with one of my mother's lovers at the time. And then we caught the taxi back. That was it. That was the whole story. But I kind of turned it into a script. And that year it won the Augie for Best Short. And that episode of Under the Skin won the AFI Award for Best Telemovie or Miniseries. So that was probably the first moment that I thought, yes, I can do this. And there is an ongoing career. And actually what happened was that particular drama opened the door for the next few jobs I got. So, particularly writing for television. I got employed by the ABC, by Penny Chapman, who was head of drama at the ABC back then, and to write a miniseries called The Wives of Kwong. And then I was also employed by the ABC. I pitched an idea to the ABC called Naked. It was an anthology series all about men and masculinity and trying to sort of unpack the masculine identities. And so you know, they were my next jobs on from film school. And so you know, like I got a lot of opportunities just from that one short
How important would you say are those moments, like those moments of reckoning, I suppose, when you get the break? Because often you don't realise you've actually just had a break. Like if you don't win an award or you don't get the sort of external recognition or validation, I suppose, in some way, you might have just sort of missed your own opportunity, if that makes sense.
I guess for me that particular moment was really important because I had come into filmmaking quite late. Like I wasn't straight from high school kind of passionate filmmaker. I had detoured by university first and then art school. And so the question of whether I was going to even continue in filmmaking, the jury was out. That was the validation I needed to sort of keep pursuing that path, because I could have gone back to visual arts or I could have gone back towards academia, because I had done well in both of those fields prior to filmmaking. So it helped me make a choice about where I was going to next. I think that you can continue a career without those external validations if that is what you really know. You know, like I think maybe for me I needed it because I didn't know that. But I think if you as a creative know that's directing, writing, or whatever it is that is your chosen field is for you, then, you know, I don't think you necessarily need external markers, because ultimately, you know, what has to drive you has to come internally. It has to come from your passion to tell stories and your passion to sort of say something about the world.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I suppose you've made everything from comedy to drama to documentary, as you said before. You know, you've done some installation work too. What are some of the common themes that you've pursued in your work? Because it's really broad. If you look at your work as a kind of retrospective up until this point, you know, you've got many and many years to go. But are there common themes that you can see now if you're standing outside of the work?
For me, the work started out very personal. It was kind of stories about my mother, my sister and I. And so it was stories about being a Chinese migrant in Australia, you know, in the 60s and 70s. That was kind of the starting point. And then that sort of personal imperative continued on with stories about being gay. And then stories about being male, and then stories about being gay, male, and Chinese. You know, like, you know, trying to grapple with all of those things. And then I think at a certain point, after I'd sort of, you know, like, so I made, you know, documentaries like China Dolls and films like Home Song Stories, Fork on Water, which was my first feature film. They were all very close identity-based works, and that was very important to me in the early part of my career. And then as I kind of developed more confidence in my storytelling skills, you know, like I think I took that personal approach and started looking at other kinds of stories. I've always drawn to worlds that I don't know, worlds that I haven't seen before. And so like that's a recurring thing in my work, you know, both a personal interest, but also sort of some kind of political imperative to tell Asian Australian stories, because I feel that these stories are vastly underrepresented on our screens. So, you know, like, so I kind of, you know, I look to those, into that territory. You know, you make a choice about what you want to tell, where you want to tell stories. Probably the stories are always tend to be about the complications of being human, the messiness of it. No matter what form, you know, I'm kind of interested in human contradictions and the difficulty of the human predicament, I guess, is a recurring thing. I guess the other thing is I'm drawn to areas around social justice, you know, and I try to always deal with that in a value add. So for me, it's always about, you know, what can you say that hasn't been said about this subject? What can I do as a dramatist around territories that I feel very strongly about? So something like Stateless, which is about Australia's relationship to refugees, you know, how can you make a show about that that speaks to Australia's history? Like, I am big on trying to unearth hidden histories. This was a period in Australian history that was being very rapidly forgotten, and yet we live with this legacy to this very day. And it was important for me to try to tell that story as truthfully as possible. So there, I think they're the recurring things that keep coming up.
They're very intertwined. You know, just as you're describing the list, you know, you can already see the connections. Subliminal or, you know, right at the forefront, they're definitely intertwined.
Yeah. Mm. What it is that it's what moves you as a human being, you know, like what makes you feel things, because it's ultimately the emotional imperative that drives me as a creator, you know. So for instance, something like Injustice, really kind of, you know, like trying to sort of see where our society is unjust or unfair, you know, dealing with people who are at the bottom of the pecking order, so one of my big recurring themes, and particularly at the moment, questions around class and the intersections of class and race, you know.
The underdog.
The underdogs, you know, and I think that's weirdly a very Australian thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're always barracking for the underdog. I always go for the team that's kind of at the bottom of the ladder somehow.
Possibly also to do with the fact that, you know, you were a bit of like a double, triple minority, you know, in a really dominant landscape, you inevitably end up talking about things that very first and foremost have affected you. And then you start thinking about the way that that could affect others. And
I think that's it exactly. You just kind of, you know, you just feel, you know, it is what your emotional triggers are.
Yeah.
You know, as a human being, you know, these are the things I feel when someone tells me this story. And then what I try to do is use, you know, the decades of working in drama to try to apply craft to a subject matter. Mm. And then through craft, you can hopefully speak to other people. And, you know, and the more you do, the more you kind of learn about, you know, what works, what doesn't work, how to connect to an audience, the kinds of things that are important to people, the ways in which you can structure a story so that you either have a particular kind of impact or, you know, like all of those things that I think you tend to get better with as you go along, or I feel as though I've gotten better at doing that. So, you know, I feel like I've been able to speak to broader audiences as my career has progressed because I've learned how to do that. You know, it doesn't come to you naturally, you know, as you're at the beginning of your career.
I think that's where, when you're starting out, you're talking about very personal issues around identity because it's so in you. It comes out and then you see it reflected in others. And all of a sudden your mind goes, well, what are the things I don't know about? What are the worlds I don't understand? Who are the people I don't connect with? And then the ideas come, right? That's sort of the process which you've just described.
And it's also about empathy. I think that what we're trying to do is get into the skin of another character, another human being. You know, that, you know, drama is really about writing other points of view, other people's points of view of the world. So to be able to do that, you have to be empathetic and you have to be compassionate. And so I think those things are really important, and I think that is how we can contribute to any particular subject or any particular...
Mm. There's such a lack of it in the kind of wider Australian media landscape, I think, too. There has been for a long time. I think that's shifting. I remember once someone said to me very early on in my career, I was like, someone said, look, you're just not going to make it. You should forget about being a journalist because you're too empathetic. You've got way too much empathy. It's just, you know, you can't be objective. You can't remove yourself. Go and work in documentary. You're an empath. And I mean, I already knew that. I knew that.
Yeah.
And it was that safe idea of, well, my parents get what a journalist is, so I'll do that for a bit and I'll find the way forward. So it is really interesting hearing you say that, because at the crux of, there's so many ideas. There's so many stories you can tell. You know, there's just an endless well of stories, and people like us are constantly seeking them out, whether it's in documentary or drama or whatever medium you choose to convey a message or share a story. It doesn't really matter as long as the story gets out there. taking that into consideration, like taking the idea that there's a lack of empathy, where do you think the holes are in the screen industry at the moment? And I suppose you're in a really good place to comment on that because you've just said that your own output has changed and, you know, you've been able to craft it with such kind of sheer nuance, you know, and detail because you've learned what works. And you keep challenging those ideas for yourself around what works and what doesn't, which is why your work gets better and better. So in terms of thinking about how that sense of empathy really opens people up and it makes us more receptive to other humans, like where are the holes in the screen industry that need to be filled so there's more of that? And essentially, at the end of the day, Australians get along better. We understand each other better. That's the power of storytelling, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. No, I'm 100% in agreement with that. I'm not quite sure. I mean, I guess I try to, you know, like I just look for the things that are affecting to me. And I guess I'm not so great at knowing globally what is missing or isn't from our screen industries. I think where we're suffering as a society is that, you know, we're in an increasingly polarized society where people just get their information from different epistemological systems. And so our ability to speak to one another is becoming increasingly fraught.
Taking your background into consideration and your trajectory until now, if you're thinking about cultural diversity, inclusivity, representation, they're all words that we've both spoken on 5,000 panels about, you know, as an Asian creator, as a Arab creator, as gay men too, you know, there's, as I said before, we fit into many minorities. They're things that we've sort of heard for such a long time, you know, in our respective careers for the past two decades, I would say, very easily. Where are we on that diversity issue right now, do you think?
I actually think we're in probably the best position that I've seen it in three decades of working in this industry, just in terms of the sheer volume of creative people that I'm meeting who come from different kinds of backgrounds. 5 years ago, I would have said, oh, you know, it's all lip service, nothing has changed. But today, I think that things are changing, and I think they're changing rapidly, and I think we're getting a whole range of different stories. And I think that's exciting, you know, like I think it's an exciting time, you know, like I look back to 30 years ago and, you know, like really I could count the number of Asian Australian filmmakers on one hand, really, and I kind of knew them all and half the time I was mistaken for one or the other of them.
People still think I'm the lead till today.
Yeah, exactly. So, but now, you know, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of, you know, emerging writers and directors. And I think that they're, you know, like...
But how do you think that's happened? How have you seen that change play out in the screen industry specifically?
I think that, you know, it's very bureaucratically led, and it's also led by a growing political awareness within corporations as well, you know, within Australia, because Australia is a very bureaucratic system. You know, the government bureaucracies like Screen Australia, Film Victoria, all of those funding bodies have a huge influence on the output, what gets made here. But at a certain point in history, recent history, they all turned their gaze towards the lack of representation, both in front of the camera and behind the camera. But all of those organisations suddenly started talking about diversity and inclusion in a way which kind of shocked me because, you know, like, I didn't know why they suddenly did it. Mm. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it also bemuses me because I've been sort of working in this field for three decades and suddenly I'm in these meetings with white people who are lecturing me about how important diversity is. And so I find it, you know, like...
Oh, God, I can tell you some very recent experiences of that story, like a week ago, yeah.
And, you know, I sort of think, well, yeah, you know, fine, but, you know, that's a small price to pay for the fact that this is... Yeah. Seems to be a shift.
There's a groundswell, isn't there?
It feels like there's absolutely a groundswell, which wasn't there before. And, you know, phenomenal you know, like nothing happens overnight in this business. Like, you know, you have an idea and then if you're lucky 5 years later, it makes the screen, if you're lucky.
And yeah. I mean, I brought that up because I think your work has played a really big role in that. I mean, you think to take something like The Family Law, yes, it was on SBS and all of those things that you said earlier, but the reality is what other program have you ever seen on an Australian screen that where the majority of the cast are all Asian?
Yes,
Asian Australian, Asian. That has not happened in the history of screen in Australia.
Yes. Also, you know, that it's not necessarily about being Chinese. It's just
an Australian experience. Exactly. Yes. That's sort of what I was going to say. So how, you know, from your perspective, you've been in the very beginning sort of processes of a project like that. You know, you've been there from this setup. You know, what are the conversations that are important to be had at that part of a process? And I suppose, you know, this is not about you sharing tricks of the trade. It's more so to demonstrate how crucial it is that from the very outset, the you know, the end game is clear, because that's what's making the change, I think.
Well, for me, again, it's about how you can contribute to this current conversation, you know, or any cultural conversation that you're a part of. I have very little interest in parroting things that have already been said. So in this instance, The Family Law, I felt that there had never been, an all Chinese Australian TV show. I did a show called Maximum Choppage, which
was great.
Which I loved, which was like a martial arts.
That was with Craig Anderson, yeah?
Craig Anderson, beautiful Craig Anderson, Lawrence Long.
Lawrence Long, yeah.
The Family Law felt like it was in this unique territory. But I also, you know, honestly, I loved Benjamin's memoir, and I loved the fact that it talked about how a divorce impacted on the children, you know, and I felt that that was something that was relatable to, you didn't have to be Chinese. Mm. So that combination of things made me feel passionate about that project, and that it was hopefully something that would speak to a wider audience. You know, it has in so many ways. Mm. I think it has been very successful. And also the development model of it was really important because, you know, like, you know, it was the teaming, creating the right team to make that show work. I'm a great believer in not throwing people under the bus. It's not just about having a particular experience. It's actually being able to have the skills to then allow our audiences into that experience. And so if you're trying to create a work in the world, you need both of those things. You need both the experience and you need the skill set to then, you know, transmit that experience.
So speaking of creative teams and kind of pulling, you know, the right minds together, I suppose, or sometimes perhaps, you know, controversially, minds that may not otherwise work together. Has there been an unlikely collaborator in your years of making screen-based work?
I mean, I always have a reason for why. So I never see it as unlikely. I mean, Maximum Choppage, for instance, came from a guy called Tim Lee, who was in the chorus of a martial arts on stage show that I did called Shanghai Lady Killer, and he just showed me these movies that he and his mates made, a bunch of Vietnamese people in Parramatta made, called Maximum Choppage. And there were just these zany martial arts, homemade martial arts movies, crazy. And I just thought, well, there's a show in this. You know, that came from, you know, an unlikely situation. You know, other situations are a little bit more predictable, like The Slap, you know, like I read, you know, Christmas is a Friend, I read his book, thought it was amazing, thought it should be a TV series, and, you know, it went forward from there. You know, every particular project has its genesis, you know, and its individual genesis, and every situation is kind of unlikely, but also makes sense.
So where are you at in your trajectory now, would you say? You've been working for a few decades. You've made so much.
Yeah, I'm tired.
Yeah. I was going to say, apart from being tired and exhausted, do you feel like, I suppose before you talked about how you've progressed creatively. I think that's very clear. Mm. And you've, you know, your craft has been really honed and you've really focused on certain aspects of the way you do things in order to make them greater and better. But where are you at in your trajectory, do you feel now?
I guess for me, you know, like a couple of years ago, I left Matchbox, which was the company that I set up 13 years ago. I sort of decided that I wanted to focus on more on international work. And so, you know, I've got a show coming out on Netflix called Clickbait, which is set in Oakland, but we shot it in Australia. So I guess, you know, I've got a couple of new projects which are much more international in their focus. So I think that's where, you know, it's just what you haven't done before. But, you know, like there's always going to be some recurring imperative of a story that moves me or territory that I'm really interested in. Like I'm currently working on a show for SBS, which is about Middle Eastern men, violence and masculinity. You know, and that's a subject that is very interesting to me. You know, I'm working with Osama Sami and a number of other really interesting Middle Eastern filmmakers on this topic.
I want to hear more about that.
Yeah, no, it's if we get it to right, I think it'll be amazing and it'll be very original.
This is a difficult question. I think a lot of people get asked this question. I get asked it too. We all do. And I think it's good to think about. But I suppose if I phrase it a little differently, it might help you think about it a little differently. If you were to look back at your work today and, you know, imagine if it was a sort of retrospective in a gallery, what's the one project you put up front, like, you know, your sort of signature piece?
God. The Home Song Stories is the one that is the most personal and the most meaningful to me, you know, just because it's my family story. And it's, you know, it's a homage to my sister and, you know, that's important. The Slap was, you know, like just in terms of, you know, it was probably my first really successful TV show, and I think it kind of opened a lot of doors for me as a creator. Mm. And then I guess those two, and then, you know, there are personal favourites, you know, like I love Sadness, which was, you know, a documentary I made with William Young about...
It's beautiful.
You know, yeah. It's a stage monologue he did, and it's probably one of the simplest things I've ever done and one of the few things that, you know, like, and hardly anyone's seen it. So
I've seen it. It's gorgeous.
Everything has its kind of place in your heart. Mm. So, you know, it's hard to identify any one thing.
What would wiser, more experienced Tony say to that Tony, you know, who was starting out a few decades ago? Is there a golden lesson? It's probably a few, but...
Yeah, I think that, you know, with the wisdom of hindsight, you just want to try to... doesn't matter, it's just TV. Calm down. Don't freak out so much. Don't get, you know... Like, I think that what you learn as you go along is that your identity is not necessarily embedded to your success or failure as a filmmaker. You know, there are, you know, that's... just part of who you are. Another part of who you are is your success or failure as a human being. It's actually about the kindness you show in life and in the relationships around you and the people you love. And ultimately, that's always going to be the most important thing. And you just kind of have to remember that and keep a perspective on that, because sometimes when you're, you know, working in what feels like a high-stakes industry, and certainly when there's a lot of money at stake and, you know, everything feels life or death, actually it's not.
Yeah.
Just got to remember that.
It's great not. Advice. Yeah, it's
you
great
know,
advice.
It's kind of like, you know, well, what's life or death? It's life and death. Everything else is kind of like, you know, you can get over it and almost always I've found that you can solve problems, you know, like problems can be solved.
Mm.
And that every new situation creates a new problem that you have never experienced before, because it's always new, unique, and that every new situation can be solved as well.
Tony, as someone who moves through the world with their heart, very much so. That's so evident in, you know, the few times that I've met you and spoken to you, and in the work that you put out, it's really clear that you move with your heart, which is so beautiful and really rare, which, sadly. Do you still find that you have kind of conflict with your head and heart?
I think that sometimes you you can take on projects for cynical reasons, and that, you know, the only way that you can carry on with those projects is if you learn to invest in them. Head and heart always have to go hand in hand. For me, ultimately, the most successful projects are where there's both, where it has something to say and it has something to feel. You know, and those two things together are the sweet spot. Otherwise, I can't work on it if it doesn't have both of those things. You know, and no matter what the form or no matter what the genre or the, you know, or the budget or whatever's at stake, unless it has both those things walking together, hand in hand, I can't see how it's worthwhile.
Yeah, somebody who I really respect and admire very much said to me once, what you do day to day doesn't really matter so much. It's about the traces you leave behind, you know, and the mark that you leave, or how people feel when you've left a room. Or is that something that you think about? And I don't like the word legacy because I think it's a really loaded word, but that's the sort of thing that they were talking to me about, you know, when they were sort of saying what they wanted to get out of this interview. Yeah, what are the sort of traces that you're leaving? And can you see that sort of map emerging through the work that you're creating?
I think, you know, like I'm about to turn 60, so that's a big sort of change in life. So particularly, you know, there are all kinds of new things that I'm going to have to face over the next couple of decades, all about mortality and finitude and you know, I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, like I also realise that, you know, we work in an industry where there is, a lot of ageism. Having lived a life where I've kind of dealt with issues around race, issues around sexuality, issues around class, I sort of see ageism as the new thing that I've got to deal with. So, you know, I'm up for it. You know, like I'm up for that discussion, for the kinds of biases that come your way from being in a certain age in our society. And I think it's a very Western thing because, you know, like most of the Asian cultures that I'm aware of and Indigenous cultures, First Nations cultures, to be an elder is to be respected.
Yeah.
Whereas in, I think Western cultures are particularly good at tearing down subsequent generations. So that's something that I kind of see. But also, as part of entering this new decade, you do have to think of what you're going to leave behind. You know, you do have, you know, that's part of the, you know, like every decade that you enter has attendant thoughts that are natural to that decade. And so I do think, you know, how can I help other filmmakers, for instance? You know, how can I help support other filmmakers who are on a path that I recognise? And how can I support talent that I particularly warm to? You know, or people that I want to. So I think about that a lot. And within the space that I occupy, how can you make that space a meaningful place for people? How do you kind of find ways to talk about things, difficult conversations, in a way which can make the world a better place? That's kind of almost always my first position now. Probably much more than when I was younger. Like, I think I was probably more kind of angrily political in my, you know, 20s and 30s, like more socialist kind of...
More sort of reactionary rather than being proactive. Yeah.
But now I sort of feel like, you know, we do work in a compassionate medium. How do we kind of get people to connect to each other, look at each other? And you know, it's really, really simple. You know, drama, when it really affects people, gives people something to talk about, a common experience of, you know, like whether it's, you know, a show like Offspring, where people from completely different political persuasion can meet at a water cooler at work and talk about how affected they were by Patrick's death. You know, like, you know, all of those things are touch points.
It's humanity. It's humanity.
Touch points are very common in humanity. Like, everything that we do is about what are the things that connect us as human beings. And I think those messages are really important. And they're the messages that I'm kind of interested in talking about. And then, you know, with filmmakers who talk in the same language as me, they're the people I end up working with.
That's beautiful. It's a beautiful place to leave things. I think that's a really nice way to wrap up.
That was filmmaker, director, producer, writer, and showrunner Tony Ayres speaking with Patrick Abood. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. Please check out our other exciting interviews on the Colour Cycle podcast and conversations with pioneering artists from culturally diverse backgrounds. This interview was recorded by Patrick Abood during COVID lockdown and produced by Najet El Gauli on the Gadigal land of the Eora Nation. Music you heard was La Toile Danse Part 1 by Maidan under Creative Commons License 4.0. You'll find more information in the show notes below. I'm Lena Nahluz from Diversity Arts Australia, and thanks for joining me. See you next time.